and welcome to the Nick Chats podcast. My name is Beth Mace, and I'm the chief economist and the director of research and analytics at NIC. I'm so happy that you can join us today for this live broadcast. The focus of the Nick Chats podcast is talking to interesting people that are going to have some great ideas that I think you'd like to hear about. As you listen today, I hope that you will find some humor, some insights, some inspiration, and hopefully a moment where an aha light bulb goes off, where you hear something that will be inspiring for you as you continue to listen to the podcast. Now, let me tell you a little bit more about the structure of today's podcast. First, I'm going to tell you three statements about my guest, and two of those will be true. Throughout the podcast, then, I will let you know which of those are true and which are not true. Second, there's three standard questions that we always ask during our podcast. The first is the largest challenges facing our industry. Second is one thing to grow talent in our industry. And the third is one innovative idea or way that we can strengthen our industry. So I'm delighted today that I have Don Husey with me. And Don is a managing director of senior housing and finance practice at Ziegler. Don, thank you so much for being here.
Glad to be here. Thanks, great. Beth.
So let's start off with the three truths, or the two truths in one line. We'll weave those into the story. Okay. So is it, don't tell me, but
okay.
So one might be that you have spent 8 days on an aircraft carrier. Maybe. Or that you have raced sailboats as a hobby, or that you won the Louis Armstrong Jazz Award when you were in high school. So maybe. Audience, we'll tell you a little bit about really what's happened. But before that, let's tell me a little bit about what you do at Ziegler as a managing director of the senior housing and finance practice.
So I came on board with Ziegler about 3 years ago to help grow our for-profit practice, which is focused on the primary audience here at Nick. Ziegler is well known in the not-for-profit tax-exempt world. We issue between $4 and $5 billion a year of bonds for projects in the tax-exempt world. We've recently moved in to build all the products needed to deliver to the for-profit sector. So we internally, we call it our senior housing and care finance practice to distinguish from our internal tax-exempt folks.
Okay, great. And what would make you unique in that right now? Why would someone want to come to you at Ziegler as opposed to another source of financing?
Well, look, I think today CFOs in this business have a really, really difficult job. They're responsible for HR, they're responsible for technology generally, they're responsible for financials. And frankly, managing the balance sheet is not the highest priority. So what we bring to the table is a comprehensive approach of providing debt, providing equity, and also M&A services around the industry. So really trying to help CFOs, CEOs manage their balance sheet for growth in a very productive way.
And what drives credibility for your organization?
Ziegler has probably the best research of any firm out there outside of Nick,
of course.
Right, yeah,
of
exactly. Course. I said Nick. But you work closely with Lisa McCracken, our director of research.
I do.
We have extensive experience there. We actually, frankly, just hired an individual to help us on the for-profit side to do research
great.
As well.
Great.
So we're excited about that opportunity. She'll join us in January. So that's one. Secondarily, we have our Ziegler Linkage Funds that invest in technologies for post-acute care. And it really, technology is going to be a driver. There's this synergy between, and that's not quite the right word, but between technology, care, and real estate that is going to have an impact on this industry long term. So our Ziegler Linkage Funds provide, it's really like our own little shark tank of what are going to be the tried and true resources out there long term that you can invest in that will not be gone in 2 years. There's millions of dollars you can spend on technology. At our recent Leading the Age conference, there were 50 new technology entrances in there. We counted that. Yeah, just only 50 this year. So that's the kind of market, and we can bring some clarity and direction to the tech strategy for folks.
Okay, so let's talk about Lisa McCracken, your colleague, for a minute. Hi, Lisa, if you're listening. I think that you and she have started a Ziegler NIC NIC lender survey. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we're doing this lender survey several times a year to get a sense of what the market is like. There's really no data out there in terms of interest rates. You know, some banks are moving to SOFR, LIBOR is going away. What is the impact there? We recently did a piece that the banks are combining, and with the banks combining, that's really constraining some of the opportunities. And even there's even been, I think, two or three more combinations that have been announced in the last few weeks.
Yeah, so mergers and acquisitions, because the sector's consolidating. It's been doing this for, my entire career, for like 30 years.
Exactly, 30 years. Yeah.
So this is unique, though, this particular report, because it really focuses on senior housing.
Correct.
And the funding can be different. The cost of financing can be different for seniors housing, I think, right?
Exactly.
Than it could be for multifamily, for example.
Well, and the risk profiles are different between the different products, right? Entrance fee CCRCs are one risk profile. Skilled nursing is another risk profile. Active adult rental is another risk profile. And IL-AL memory care congregate with services is a whole different risk profile. So to look at the segmentation in terms of how different banks are viewing those risk profiles, we haven't seen in this industry ever.
Right. So for those who happen to be listening who are lenders, if you'd like to contribute, we'd like to have your data. Pluck, pluck. So let's switch a little bit. Actually, let me do one of the questions about you. The two truths and something that's not true. So is it true that you you won a Louis Armstrong Jazz Award in high school? Is that true?
It is true.
All right. And tell us a little bit about that.
I played the saxophone growing up, and I always loved jazz. And I played the flute, the clarinet, and the tenor saxophone, sometimes alto sax.
Do you still do that?
Very rarely.
A late night, maybe?
Late night.
Sounds good.
Now that all the kids are gone, it's a little easier, though.
Yeah, you have four children, right? It sounds like they're fully launched. So congratulations.
They're launched.
That's good for you.
No one's living at home currently. So okay,
that's good. So let's talk a little bit more about you and your career path, because you've been involved in seniors housing for a long time as a very young man. Tell us about that. Maybe a couple insights you have from the experiences you've had in all the different parts of senior housing that you've been into.
Sure. So I've been in the business since 1986. I graduated from the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire Healthcare Administration Program in 1985. My wife actually graduated in 1987 with the same degree. Some people don't know that. Have been in the business. I started with a company called American Retirement Corporation back
ARC.
In ARC in 1986. And we had four properties at that point in time. We grew that. I became an associate executive director for an entrance fee CCRC. I turned around a rental community, managed multiple other entrance fee communities, then became a regional VP of operations. We took the company public in 1998. And then I opened, helped open a fair number of buildings, in the late 90s to early 2000s, and had my fourth child and was on the road way too much. So I had an opportunity to go be, work and, run the, an investment portfolio for, healthcare, REIT. So I did that for about 5 years. And then the last 15 years, I've been with a number of companies just focused on transactional finance work.
So you've been focused on seniors housing your whole career. So why? What happened? Why did you like that? What about senior housing is appealing?
You can do well by doing good. I think that's the most important.
So that's an aha moment. Do well by doing good.
Right. So I was telling someone yesterday, I'm still on the board at our healthcare administration program at Eau Claire. In that program, we're in the School of Business. Our graduates have the highest starting salary out of any of the programs.
Good takeaway. Highest starting salary.
Right. So we're trying to, we need good leadership in this industry. We need strong leaders. We need people that have a passion for the business. My grandmother was my inspiration. She was a very tough individual, had a very difficult life, lived most of her life with one lung, and would do amazing things all day long. Just an amazing woman. And, you know, between that and looking at the demographics, I thought that we could make an impact.
So you're involved with Vision 2025.
Correct.
So let's talk about that for a little bit. Tell our audience what that is and how that's sort of helping with young people, pulling young people into the sector.
Great. So Vision 2025 is a coordinating effort between all of the associations, universities, and providers, both for-profit and not-for-profit providers out there, to build 25 strong university programs with similar curriculum, similar career guidance and parameters to help drive leadership in this business for the long term.
Is that undergraduate or graduate?
Some mostly undergraduate, but graduate as well. So there's only a few graduate programs in the country, but some are in the School of Business, some are in the gerontology, some are in hospitality. Yeah. And we need all three pieces, right? We need the administrative / business side. You do need the hospitality side, but the clinical side is becoming more and more important as well.
Yeah.
And how we deliver the clinical component. COVID, by the way, to all the folks out there that have been delivering care to our residents, you all have done an amazing job over COVID. It is so impressive. So thank you. Thank you to all the caregivers out there.
Yeah, totally concur with that. So also, it's interesting. I know a number of operators now are actually going into high schools as well.
Yes.
And trying to recruit high school students to sort of get that passion developed early on. And then that could be a good feeder into some of the university programs that you're talking about.
Exactly.
So that's great. So let's talk a little bit more about the industry. What's your perspective on where we are in the senior housing industry post-COVID as we move into 2022?
I think the next 12 to 24 months are going to be rocky, particularly for senior living. So I view the business as our skilled nursing group, which has one set of parameters, and senior housing. Skilled nursing had a significant amount of opportunity in terms of federal and state programs to help them get through the pandemic. Senior housing has not seen much of anything, and almost nothing from the states in most cases, because it's a private pay business. So when occupancy is dropped to 80% roughly across the industry, it's not true everywhere, and it's very different geographically. That's had an impact. You also had a fair number of properties that are in Phillip, and those properties have delayed Phillips at least a year, in my opinion. That's about $1 million of additional losses that you probably weren't counting on, roughly, when you're looking at the data, 500,000 to $1 million, roughly. And that is causes strain. Yeah,
right.
And we're starting to see some of that. The banks have been very lenient so far. I think that's starting to change as we move into 2022. So I think the trajectory of how quickly we get from 80% to 85% and then hopefully towards that 88 to 90% occupancy is the unknown that will.
Right. In the third quarter data from NIC Map Vision shows an 80.1% occupancy in the third quarter. So we have a long ways to go. So what happens if a operator or if a property starts to waver a little bit? Will they declare bankruptcy, or would you take it back on, or how would that proceed?
So I've had the opportunity to work on a lot of troubled deals, both as an operator and as a lender as an equity participant. I think the first thing that I would say is talk with your banks, talk with your capital partners early in the process. If you're most people out there are doing cash flow analysis. Cash flow is everything in this business. Talk to folks early, keep them informed, communicate with them. Life will be a whole lot easier for you when that comes. If you do think you're going to have to, that bankruptcy may be an option or out there, get bankruptcy counsel involved early. There's things you can do and can't do within the first or prior 90 days to filing and the post 90 days. It's really important. Hopefully we don't have too many or any larger players have to take that action. But in the, like in 98, we had essentially every publicly traded skilled nursing entity have to file bankruptcy because the government, you know, pulled back Medicare so far that it just wasn't.
That's not anticipated right now.
Not anticipated right now. We don't see that at all happening, particularly in skilled nursing. But I tell you, I am still concerned about skilled nursing because skilled nursing occupancy is down around 75%,
yes, that's right,
and not moving up as quickly as senior housing.
Yep.
At least the numbers I'm looking at.
Yep. But in general, I mean, at least so far to date, we haven't seen a whole lot of distressed activity going on. And that's really, I think, a statement to cooperation among lenders, yourself included, and operators and the equity providers as well. And then there was a lot of support that was given through the government to get everybody through the pandemic. So
exactly,
combination of all of that.
And let's be honest, the banks really don't want to own senior housing.
They're not good operators. No.
Banks are not. I can guarantee you that banks are not good operators.
All right. So let's go to some of our standard questions. Largest challenge facing our industry.
Labor.
Everybody at the conference has been saying labor. So, exactly. So any ideas on how to...
You know, I think doing some... I've seen some really interesting things where residents get involved to support your existing staff. So there's a group in DC and an entrance fee community there that the residents have taken on the responsibility of helping the staff both get the funding to get their green cards and to pass the U.S. citizenship test.
Oh,
so that's a really cool thing that could be done across the country. Yeah, it's... not sure I can share who it is, but
okay.
I'll let you know later. And then some other things that we've seen, you know, with the kids in COVID, parents have been frustrated that the kids aren't getting any education. There was several communities that took in residents' kids, and they had classes for them in this.
Oh, I didn't know that either. Residence. I haven't heard that.
Wow. So I think we're going to need more programs like that. The residents have so much capability and they want to help, and they want to help your staff. If you can build that culture and drive that culture, it's hard, and it's still, we just don't have enough workers.
Well, in fact,
are programs outside of just throwing money at it.
That's a really good idea. I did a presentation yesterday, and I was talking about the labor force participation rate, nationally is way down.
Yeah.
Well,
60%,
for women, the participation rate is at the lowest rate it's been since the 1970s.
Yes.
And when you look at that, it's largely a function of the fact that there's not daycare and that women have to, they're in a tough spot, right? Do you take care of your child or do you go and you work? So it's a significant issue. All right. So I'm going to go back to we're going to discover now which is true and which is false. So how about, do you in fact, have you actually spent 8 days on an aircraft carrier?
I did spend 8 days on an aircraft carrier.
I'm intrigued by that because I really like aircraft carriers. So why is that?
My brother-in-law was in the military. He flew A-6s, which are the planes that would go in and jam radar back in the old days. And he was coming back from a cruise, and they do these things called Tiger Cruises. So he flew to Honolulu with my father-in-law, and he and I got on the ship there, and then we came all the way back to San Diego. So a lot of fun. Other cool thing, we're in the middle of the ocean about 3 days out, and I'm touring the air traffic control tower, and two B-52 bombers came by on and said, "Hey, we're in the area. Do you mind if we do a flyby?" And like, apparently this doesn't happen because the Airbus, they call them, the air traffic controller, is like, clear the airspace.
I can imagine that flew by
a couple times at deck level. Pretty amazing. I have some cool shots of that.
So I have to ask, where do you sleep on an aircraft carrier? It wasn't comfortable.
It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. You're in bunks. There's like six bunks in a room, and
you're right on top of each other.
Right on top of each other is not a lot of room, that's for sure. But they eat very, very, very well. Great food any time of day or night.
Okay, so that would mean that you don't race sailboats. That was the other one.
I did not race sailboats. I would love to race sailboats. I don't.
Well, maybe that day will come. Okay, so back to the standard questions. We already talked about how do you grow talent. So we talked about Vision 2025. We talked about other ideas that universities are doing. Let's go to the question about what is another outside of that idea, and outside of the ideas you just gave about staff working, residents working with the staff. What would be another innovative idea on how to strengthen our industry?
I think this integration of utilizing technology to improve quality and drive care is going to be very important. One of our strengths at Ziegler is our corporate finance team does a lot of work in the telemedicine, telehealth space. Yeah. So we've sold, found equity, and invested in a fair number of telemedicine opportunities. And there's some revenue opportunities in there as well. So I think technology and how to use technology, pre-COVID, there were about, call it 50 codes that you could bill for in telehealth. I think today there's about 175 different codes you can use. So that has completely changed the opportunity out there. I think that's a key as well. And then I think we need to do this isn't super high tech, but we've lost our ability to do true consumer research when we're going out and doing products. And until we get back and do some serious consumer research, I'm not sure we're going to be building what the consumer wants.
Well, that's such an important topic because the consumer actually is changing. The resident is changing.
Exactly.
So, initially when you started in the industry, you were serving the greatest generation.
Correct. And then the silent generation.
Yeah, now you're in the silent generation. And unfortunately, not too many of the greatest generation that are left. But we're moving into the baby boomers. And, today, baby boomers were born from 1946 to 1964. So the oldest baby boomer today is 75. So typically in senior housing, you get a resident that's 83 to 85. So we're close. We've been waiting to be close for a long time. So we're close, but we're not quite there yet, right? So we're trying to figure out what that consumer wants. So what do you think the baby boomer wants?
Well, that's really interesting. I'm not sure I know what the baby boomer wants, especially post-COVID. I think, everyone is rethinking their lives and how they're living post-COVID. We heard that just in the last session with Paul Krugman and Larry Summers. The other interesting thing that Bob Kramer has just been talking about is people choose senior living in their last 5 years of life. Well, that last 5 years of life has slowly increased over the past 20 or 30
years. Maybe they're getting older.
As they're getting older. Right. So today's world, we're serving more like 85, let's call it 85 to 92, 93 year olds. Whereas when I started in the business, we were serving basically 78 to 82. Right. So that means that people are living longer. Their quality of life is better. But they also have more and more complicated health issues that can be controlled with everything from diet to social determinants of health, therapy and medications as well. So it's gotten more complicated. It will continue to get more complicated. And we have another company that is in our Ziegler Linkage Fund called COLSA, which does end-of-life care management. And they use some data analytics and nurse practitioners and physicians to help manage the cost of that care over time. I think you're going to see a lot more of that as we move to the future.
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually characterize the industry as sort of maturing.
Yes.
And we're starting to see more product segmentation and product diversification. So you're seeing more products that are being developed for middle income seniors, all the way up to higher and more affluent seniors. And at the same time, you see products being developed for high acuity, end of life. And then you're going down the other spectrum to that where the baby boomers are today are 75. So you see a lot of developers now going out and starting to build what we're coining the phrase right now is active adult.
Right.
So are you do any lending? Are you at all involved in the active adult area?
We have done some lending in the active adult area. We have, I think, one project right now that we're trying to raise some equity for as well. So we're actually looking at working with a not-for-profit provider that's going to do some active living.
Oh,
so,
interesting.
Things continue to change.
Yeah, that's the great thing about our industry, actually.
Right.
It doesn't stay still, right? It keeps on moving. All right, so we're about to wrap up. Anything else you want to share with our audience or any insights you want to share, or especially if there's a young person, anything? Any wisdom?
Wisdom? The one thing that I tell folks all the time, especially our younger folks, you know, there's this drive to, you know, kind of want to advance their career as fast as possible. I would really encourage folks to find a mentor and spend some time with that mentor and really learn. And, you know, there's a lot to learn out there. The world's changing. You know, I'm impressed with the team of folks that we've been able to bring on board. We have a great team that we're building, hard workers, smart. You know, we have conversations where we can agree to disagree and come together at the end to, you know, yeah, drive the product. So I would say finding a mentor has been a kind of a lost art, I think, and can really be helpful, especially for someone in, say, their mid-20s to early 30s.
Yeah, and I would say that's also a shout out to those who could be mentors.
Correct.
To other people. Yes. To find someone you can mentor, because I think in your life, we had a conversation in prepping for this, that you had some pretty significant mentors in your life, and I certainly have in mine as well.
Exactly.
And it's really nice to have a person that you can lean on to give you some direction. So with that... Sure. I think we're good. Don, thanks so much.
Great.
We'll see you later at the conference.
Thank you, Beth.
Thank you all for listening. And if you want to find out more, you can make sure to tune in to nic.org/chats. Thank you so much.